Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com. Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live, and we're kicking off the third hour here. We talked about the psychopath idea that is being promoted by multiple people, not only just candidates for president on the Republican side, but also people who are already in office, like the Dan Crenshaw character, the eyepatch McCain guy. He's already got a bill in proposing to authorize military force be used in Mexico, ostensibly against drug cartels. And if you want to comment, you can join us here. The number is 603-283-6160. This isn't to say that Democrats are any better. They're obviously, you know, warmongering over in Ukraine and laundering billions of U.S. dollars over to those people over there. But, of course, this is a different proposal, a different warmongering proposal by the right wing. They're trying to use the deaths that are caused by fentanyl overdoses.
The deaths of drug dealers.
Oh, yeah, and
deaths of users.
Okay, so that's what these guys are representing. But the whole why we need to invade Mexico thing, like, oh, look at, they're killing tourists. And the guys that got...
You
know, they were not tourists. They were drug dealers.
Yeah, no, that's not what they're focusing on. They're focusing on the large number. I mean, there's a fair number of people who will overdose as a result of taking in fentanyl into their bloodstream through what they thought was a heroin injection, but it actually has this fentanyl stuff in it.
And basically the reason fentanyl is coming on so hard now and the heroin is dropping off is because the U.S. is no longer... in Afghanistan, you know, subsidizing or basically enforcing the cultivation of poppy, the processing of heroin, and shipping it directly to the United States and Europe and pumping it like crazy.
I don't know if that's the reason. I mean, the thing I want to know is, where is the fentanyl being added to the heroin? Because what doesn't make sense to me is that the cartels would be doing it, right? Like, the cartels... don't seem to be, to me, the ones that would be likely to debase their product at that level. Usually the product debasement in black markets comes later on, right? So the idea would be the cartel would sell a more pure product, and then it gets worse as it gets closer to the end user because each middle point, each middleman for that product has the incentive to debase the quality of the product, meaning that if you get in a, you know, a kilogram of heroin or whatever, and then you put in a kilogram of, you know, some sort of cutting agent, I don't know how much fentanyl they cut this stuff with or whatever, I don't know the numbers, but you cut it with whatever you cut it with, you then sell it for whatever price you sell it at, and you sell it at full price, even though you've put in a bunch of stuff that's not heroin, right? So, like, why would the cartels be the ones that are doing that? It seems to me like it would be the lower level dealers that are the ones that are, you know, going to be debasing the product. In which case, bombing the cartels is certainly not going to solve that problem. But that's who they're blaming for this. They're blaming the cartels for cutting their own product, essentially, which and I don't buy it.
Mike Gill and this guy, I think his name is Brandon O'Connell or O'Connor. He's a YouTuber, but basically listening to some of his videos, they were talking about how the fentanyl is mostly coming from China. Mm-hmm. And like one way that they were sending it over was basically it looks like it's a T-shirt and you rinse out the fentanyl and it's all, you know, like something that would there was a movie like I remember, where, you know, young, something like that. Yeah, where they were doing a similar thing to this guy was explaining, but he was basically saying, and these guys say that it's like, oh, it's Elliott Hospital is like, you know, distributing it in New Hampshire. And this is why New Hampshire is like number two in the nation for fentanyl deaths per capita or whatever. And, you know, but, so a lot of it is coming from China and yeah, the cartel wants to, continue to sell drugs. So, sure. You know, I don't see the incentive of, you know, putting the fentanyl, which is just wiping the end user out, basically, it's just killing them.
Yeah, you don't want to kill your user.
Of putting that.
Doesn't make sense.
You know, people in government would really want to see it be like, you know, radical, so they could say, oh, here's this problem we need to fix.
Yeah, they poisoned alcohol, intentionally poisoned alcohol during prohibition. Prohibition.
Yeah. That's true.
Tons of people died from that.
Since the heroin, we historically know that heroin is basically directly imported into the country via the military and CIA. We've had special forces on that were there, you know, talking about this, and the special forces guys that were in Afghanistan were told explicitly, do not mess with the local economy. Well, this includes, you know, the heroin.
The fact that, and this is like not a speculation that you're talking about. Like, this is long time ex-CIA people coming out saying this absolutely happens. There's a lot of evidence for this. And so this may be the reason why these crazy ideas by these Republicans of actually having a hot war in Mexico never come to fruition, right? Like that they throw them out there during campaign season to get elected, but the CIA is like, yeah, that's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, like that could be why this never actually moves forward.
And the politicians don't want to stop the drugs. The politicians love the drug epidemic. They love the fact that so many Americans can't pay attention to what the politicians are doing, first off, because they're whacked out on drugs,
mm-hmm.
and second off, the Americans that have a, you know how many moms of children I know of that the father are like a drug addict and can't function, and, you know, these moms got to just take care of and deal with it.
Right.
You think that mom's paying attention to what's going on in politics?
No, she's too busy.
Do you think anybody who has children that are hooked on drugs are really paying attention to politics? You can't. Same thing if you got like an autistic kid. You're not paying attention to anything that's going on. You don't have the time. And so the politicians love all of the struggle of the working class and the middle class, you know, the people in the middle. And they gain from it, you know, wonderfully. But I believe the real reason to go after Mexico is so they don't get involved in with ditching the U.S. dollar. That's what I really
think. You think that's what's really going on,
yes,
behind the
absolutely.
Scenes? Well, on the front of the scenes, Trump is now reviving his hawkish instincts after originally backing away from proposals like this because of complications of fears that bombing Mexico could lead to increased asylum claims. But now he's backing up the hawkish position, saying he's vowed to deploy U.S. special forces to take on the drug cartels, quote, just as we took down ISIS and the ISIS caliphate. In one policy video released by his campaign, Trump said that if reelected, he would, quote, order the Department of Defense to make appropriate use of special forces, cyber warfare, and other overt and covert actions to inflict maximum damage on cartel leadership, infrastructure, and operations.
Who funded ISIS?
Good question.
What did all of the hardware that ISIS have say on it? What did it all look like? Like, there was a guy in Texas who had sold a plumber, who had sold a van or an electrician at some auction or traded it into a dealership, bought a new van, and
then he saw his logo on the side of a van in, like, the news.
Yeah,
in Afghanistan.
Or somewhere it was an ISIS van. So if you
That's
see
crazy.
All the ISIS equipment.
It was like Johnson Plumbing,
yeah.
You know, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Or whatever, yeah. So this guy sees his van there, and he, like, went after the dealership. What'd you do with my van? They're like, oh, we sent it to an auction. And they're like, oh, you were supposed to paint it first. You know, or whatever.
Wow.
So, but the U.S., Israel, all these, there's so many ties to ISIS that they're all funded. And so, but this has been going on for all of, since literally the Federal Reserve has existed, because these agencies have unlimited power and money because they created out of thin air the money. So they're able to just constantly fund adversarial forces all around the world. And this is, this is what bankers been doing since bankers
sure.
been banking.
Yeah. Funding both sides of conflict.
Yeah, and sometimes they don't even use people's old beater trucks. Sometimes they have, you know, a mile-long convoy of brand-new Toyota Hiluxes.
Yeah, I've seen that video, and these were all U.S.-issued, U.S. military. It's all, so now, like, with all this stuff going on in Ukraine, and I keep on hearing, you know, only 8% of the weapons are making it to the front lines of Ukraine. All these weapons are showing up in northern Africa on the black market. Look at these mortars. They're on, you know, some form of like Craigslist in somewhere, wherever, you know, and,
surprise.
And so who is the next enemy, you know, 3 years, 4 years from now, 5 years from now, that is just stocking up on all of these American munitions
that
aren't making it to, you know, Ukraine? It shouldn't be going to Ukraine anyways. I mean, I don't know. I think anybody who who's like supports his Ukraine wars, waving his Ukraine flags, they're just brain dead.
Useful idiots. Useful idiots.
Algorithmic slaves.
During a recent presidential speech in Waco, Trump compared the number of deaths from fentanyl overdoses to a kind of military attack. He said that people talk about the people that are pouring in, but the drugs that are pouring into our country, killing everybody, killing so many people, there's no army that could ever do damage to us like that still. And it's not just Trump. Other candidates are siding with him on this. Using military force on cartels without Mexico's permission, quote, would not be the preferred option, but we would absolutely be willing to do it, according to entrepreneur activist Vivek Ramaswamy in an interview. He also accused the cartels of a, quote unquote, form of attack on the United States. And just think about this for a moment. The idea here is that the cartels are importing something into the, or you know, exporting something into the United States that is dangerous, that some people are dying from using.
Public education?
They're saying that that's an attack on the United States. So, therefore, is any dangerous product that is being marketed in the United States an attack on the United States because someone could use it in an irresponsible manner, possibly die from an overdose from using that? What about fatty foods? What about sugary products? What about all the chemicals they're putting in these foods?
Tequila.
Are these attacks on the American people? Right. How many people die from alcoholism every single year? Should we be bombing the...
How many people are dying from seed oils?
Indeed. Well, it's hard to really know.
Oil.
It's hard
fried
to really know.
Fried food.
That. Yeah. Are these all attacks? Should we be bombing Seagram's factories?
Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely ridiculous. And if this goes forward, it's really scary what this could result in.
The Chinese pumping the fentanyl into the country theory, whatever, makes sense to me, especially since, you know, there was that report that there was over like 100,000 American politicians that were compromised by the Chinese Communist Party. We have, you know, if we look at the Biden crime family, we can see that they have extreme, you know, ties to the Chinese Communist Party. There's all kinds of money that has gotten funneled to the Biden crime family, you know, between pedophile Joe and pedophile Hunter. And even Joe Biden's got a brother who's, you know, they're talking about, got all kinds of money from the Chinese. And if the Chinese really wanted to, one good way to sort of destroy America, if that's what they want to do, if they want to take it over, is to, you know, send a whole bunch of very addictive, deadly, odorless, tasteless, whatever could be mixed, compounded into, you know, something that people are addicted to. And I got to agree with you, Ian. I don't think that the Mexican drug cartels are cutting their
makes
heroin
no sense.
With fentanyl, and it is probably happening on the lower levels of the distribution networks. And
isn't fentanyl also expensive though?
I think it's very inexpensive, but even heroin, you know, a few years ago was like a guy had basically said that in Manchester, New Hampshire, some kid on the street I was talking to who was a heroin addict. He's like, it's cheaper than weed. Is basically
what
he told me. Yeah, he said heroin was cheaper than weed. Like you can get like
that's crazy.
Like for $5, you can get like a, you know, a load of heroin. And he's like, yeah, it might be, you know, a little hot or something. He was telling me, and you know, it was,
I mean, what a perfect example of the abject failure of the war on drugs. If that's actually true, what that kid's saying, that heroin's cheaper than marijuana now. I mean, proof positive.
If you look at it a different way, the war on drugs is a raging success. Completely debased the United States population and made them weak and stupid and helpless and needy and scared and addicted.
And how many of these people that are
completely distracted
that are dying that Vivek and Trump and DeSantis are talking about, of these people that are dying from drug overdose of any kind, how many of them are on some form of welfare? That's the number I really
want
to know.
Probably a pretty good percentage.
Because the war needs to be on the Department of Health and Human Services for creating this massive amount of dependent people. I mean, I literally know people who are fifth generation welfare recipients. And like, there are young men out, young boys and girls that I've met, in their 20s. That, you know, in the past few years here and there, that are like, their goal is to get on welfare, to get on disability. That is a thing for, you know, a lot of urban culture now.
You know, even if they go forward with this idea of bombing the cartels or using the military against the cartels, treating them like terrorists, that kind of thing. And let's say they actually have some success and they actually destroy the lives of thousands of cartel members and they wipe out, you know, the Sinaloa cartel completely and, you know, their competition is decimated or whatever. That's not going to end the demand for drugs, right? Like there's, as long as there's people that are messed up, that they hate their life, they're going to want to alter their state of consciousness to try to forget their problems. This is one of the primary reasons why people use drugs. You talk to them, they'll tell you their life sucks. And so they want to get away from it. They can't, they're not going to kill themselves. So they're just going to do it slowly with, you know, whatever their preferred drug of choice is.
It's the only way they get pleasure is what a lot of these guys have told me.
Sure. And so that's not going to stop. You're never going to stop that until you can solve that problem at its root. So the demand for drugs isn't going to go away just because they've bombed the hell out of the cartels down in Mexico. So what's going to happen? Well, someone else is going to rise up to fill that need, or some other product is going to rise up to fill that need. I remember you guys remember hearing about Crocodile back in the day.
Yeah, oh my God, yep. That stuff was terrible.
Remember that? Can you describe what that was? Do you remember?
Oh, it was like DNA altering stuff. People were like, their bones were rotting out of their skin and stuff. You could see like their bone through their.
Their skin was rotting, the flesh was rotting off of their body.
Yeah. And it was like something that was happening in Russia, if I recall correctly, where they were just like, somebody cooked up some crazy mixture of like motor oil and like all kinds of household chemicals that they put
together.
That's
where meth came from. Right? It was just a household chemicals.
Yeah.
That you could go get.
And so like, you know, heroin's bad. But we don't know what's coming after it. Like, if they actually did have some success, and they won't, they're going to fail, and they're going to, you know, spend billions of dollars or hundreds of billions of dollars on trying to crush the cartels, and they're going to fail, and there's going to be a lot of death, and there's going to be a lot of violence.
And major blowback. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, these good Mexican people I talk about that I work with that are,
right,
like, sending money home to their families, and they're like, oh, my whole family got killed by the military.
Right.
You know, and
we were just trying to cross the border, and a drone bombed us.
So a lot of these guys are literally military age, very fit men that are single and don't have families. And when you just there's hundreds of thousands of them here. So you want to start bombing their family, their homeland, you instantly have massive terrorist cell, you know. Just
Mexican
waiting.
Terrorists, real
massive
ones.
They're
calling the cartels terrorists, but they're not doing what terrorists do.
Just like Ron Paul explained, you know, the reason for 9/11 allegedly was because of all of these, you know, which I don't believe at one minute, but you know, I believe 9/11 was 100% inside job. But if you want to believe the official story, that these, you know, 19 Islamic Middle Eastern terrorists were very upset about our freedom, which basically means that they're not upset about our freedom. They're upset that America has been destroying their homeland, destroying their people, their loved ones, their families. You start dropping bombs. America starts dropping bombs in Mexico. You're going to see places that have heavy Mexican population are going to go crazy.
Well, for sure.
Absolutely. That would be an unprecedented blowback. And the politicians love that stuff because they're like, all right, now we've got to ramp all this militarization up. You know, here.
Need more bombs.
And it's a good thing that we gave everybody, every little city in America's got tanks and got military weapons and, you know, and then we're going to need a whole bunch of UN peacekeepers from all over, all the guys in Europe that, you know, that are in Ukraine right now that live. We need to get all those mercenaries into America to fight the Mexican terrorists, because that's what you're going to create.
It's insane. That's why I say it's really scary.
It is.
What they're proposing. Let's go to the phones here. Saheed is on the line in Maryland. Saheed, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's on your mind?
I've noticed that a lot of these issues that the government keeps on getting involved with, it's almost like, it's pretty much already, I don't really know how to phrase it, but basically it's doomed to fail, right? And it doesn't seem like they care. To be honest, it seems like it only adds to their, it's another checklist, another thing that they can check off that they're doing something,
sure,
quote unquote doing something. And more and more people end up relying on it for some reason in the end. So I feel like this list keeps on growing and growing every year, every decade.
Of course, the military industrial complex has to keep manufacturing bombs, so they got to keep sending them somewhere.
Yeah, and so I feel like the argument that it's not going to work isn't that convincing in the long run, you know, because that's kind of the point. That it's not going to, I mean, they know that it's not going to
They know
work.
It's not going to work. Yeah, of course. This is just to get elected. It's just, you know, tough talk. Even if I don't even think the program's going to get off the ground because of the CIA that we were talking about earlier. I think that's going to be enough of a political undercurrent to stop this from happening. Like, they're going to bend the ears of all these candidates once they get elected and say, yeah, that whole idea about bombing Mexico ain't going to happen. And that's going to be the end of it. It's just never going to go anywhere. But if it does, it'll be an absolute tragedy, and it will be absolutely insane, and all the blowback that Jay was talking about will be real. And, you know, you want to talk about Americans dying because of drug cartels? That's going to start.
Yeah, the effects of that won't go away anytime soon.
It doesn't happen now. Like you were saying, Jay, Jeff Berwick points out, you go down to Mexico as a tourist, you're fine.
Yep.
You're going to have a great time. You're going to have some great food, get some sun, whatever. It's going to be fine. But if you are going down there with the intention of buying and selling drugs, you're probably not going to make it out alive. And that's just the reality of it. They don't target, they don't put heads on pikes of tourists down there. They don't do that yet. Right? But if you start in a bombing campaign, an assassination campaign against using the military against these cartels, they may decide
it'd be a free for all
that they'll start targeting average Americans at that point.
And a lot of Mexican culture, from what I can tell, sort of sees the cartels as like heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff Berwick talks a lot about a lot of times there was some major disaster and one of these little villages got wiped out by a flood or something, and who showed up to help them all out? The cartel.
The government, the cartel did.
The cartel's like, oh, we got this, you know, semi-truckloads of, new appliances and stuff for your houses, and they brought in tons of lumber, and they just, and the people just started, rebuilding their village.
Right.
And they were, so thankful that the cartel helped them out.
I've heard those stories.
So the cartel has a huge grassroots support in a lot of Mexico.
Yeah, and what's going to happen as a result of that if they actually start this bombing campaign? Saeed, anything else you want to share?
Yeah, I was just going to say that it just seems like the Overton window kind of keeps on growing in the wrong direction. And you guys just reminded me of something, because I'm from Somalia, got family from Somalia, and Al-Shabaab is basically the same way. Half the people see them as the good guys, and then, you know, but at the same time, it's all because of U.S. foreign policy that they even exist, you know?
Right.
And so it just continues to seem like it's moving in the wrong direction, and it's not moving back, in the right direction.
Yep, I think you're right about that. Unfortunately, it's never going to move in the right direction at the federal level. I mean, it's just going to keep going bad until it fails, until the federal government, falls apart. And hopefully that's going to be sooner rather than later. Otherwise, secession, of course, is going to be the fastest way out. There's more coming up here. Thank you, Saeed, for the call tonight. I appreciate it. This is Free Talk Live.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
USA News Update. The U.S. Attorney General says the man accused of leaking classified Pentagon documents has been arrested.
Jack Douglas Teixeira in connection with an investigation into alleged unauthorized removal, retention, and transmission of classified national defense information.
Merrick Garland said 21-year-old Jack Teixeira surrendered without incident Thursday. He's a member of the intelligence wing of the Massachusetts Air National Guard. Garland says Teixeira will appear at a U.S. district court in Massachusetts. The shooter who killed five people at the Old National Bank in Louisville was dealing with depression and anxiety. Peter Palmer, a spokesperson for the gunman's family, said his family was working with him and he was in treatment. Palmer said he's unaware of whether he was taking medication. Authorities also released 911 calls, including one from the shooter's mother, who said her son had a gun and was heading to the bank. I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is a perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. That's 800-721-2477. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras. Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live. You can join the show here if you want. We got time for you right now. You need to dial in at 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Here tonight is Ian, Matt,
and Jay.
Jay, you got a fundraiser going on right now through your website, Jay Noone. That's JayNoone.com. That's where people can go to learn a little bit more about Man Camp. But what is Man Camp?
Man Camp is, awesome. Is my idea to restore confidence in mankind. So basically, Man Camp is like a homeschool curriculum I put together to just teach kids how to do old school blacksmithing. Forging with a coal or propane forge, taking a piece of hot iron out of that forge and banging it into something on an anvil. Usually I have kids make like a coat hook. We make a squirrel cooker. There's all kinds of things we can make. You can make a bottle opener, which is, you know, a little, you know, for older kids to make or adults, just because it takes a lot of effort to make that. But I'm trying to run a man camp operation, bring all the tools, hire on some blacksmiths to help out at Pork Fest this year. And at jnoone.com, you can donate some cryptocurrencies. I haven't got up there yet a thing to donate, you know, through, you know, GoFundMe or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of working on that. It's tough when you don't have a bank account and, you know, can't, no social security number. You know, so you need to have a bank account before you can have one of those things. So that's why crypto works good. But, you know, I'm trying to basically raise about $5,000 by June 1st to put on Man Camp at Pork Fest. It is a big deal to
put it
on. It is a big goal. Yeah. And, you know, the thing is but, you know, I sell a whole bunch of meat at Porkfest cooked, and I really can't do both.
Sure.
And the last time I did Man Camp at Porkfest, it was a major success. Everybody loved it, but it just cost me a bunch of money out of my pocket. It was very expensive for me. So that's what I'm trying to do for Porkfest. And also, I really want to encourage anyone to contact me who wants to produce their own or put on their own Man Camp event somewhere. So basically, if you are any kind of tradesman, you are a carpenter, you have you're into metalworking, you know, you have a forge and a welder, you know, in your garage or whatever, any of this kind of stuff, getting some neighborhood kids to actually do something, like making their own thing. The younger the kids, better. Like, I had 6-year-olds forging a coat hook out of just a piece of quarter-inch steel, and they are just so proud of their work. And, like, you know, every parent has had their kids basically do a Man Camp project. That was just could not believe just how much of a positive result it had in their kids' life.
A little confidence boost.
It's a big confidence booster, and they just have a really good understanding of things. Like, you know, one of the kids is like in Hobby Lobby, and he's like, "Mom, I made a thing like that at Man Camp. It was, you know, a coat hook or something, or a horseshoe coat rack." And how could they sell that thing for $12? It took me an hour to make that, you know. And but, you know, it is just, you know, it brings more critical thought into life too. Once you, as a young kid, you like actually forge something out of iron and realize what kind of effort and hard work and equipment it takes. It really brings reality into perspective. And there's just a lot of adults now that have never had that experience.
If you want to learn more about Man Camp, go check out jaynoone.com. It's jaynoone.com. There are donations options there for cryptocurrencies. You got Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Monero, Dash, and like you said, you're working on other solutions for other options.
We're taking fiat because that's easy. Most people, you know, are going to donate fiat.
Unfortunately,
such a worthy endeavor. I just love Man Camp, and the whole idea of Man Camp is just awesome.
Yeah, I hope it comes back.
You know, I was tinkering. I like to tinker. You know, I was out in the garage working on my motorcycle for the last few days. I've just been enjoying the warm weather. I've spent a lot of time out there. And I set my valves on my dirt bike. And I was wondering, how many people even know how to set the valves on their dirt bike? You know, like, they're not self-adjusting. You have to get in there every once in a while and adjust them. And one of the bolts that you have to take out is a single-use bolt. And it has to be torqued to a certain specification. And I was thinking, how many guys even realize that there's such thing as a single-use bolt?
Is it like a brass bolt?
No, it's a steel bolt. Okay. But it holds the stator rotor under the crankcase. And it's, you know, when you torque that down once, the steel actually stretches a little bit. So if you go to loosen it, you can't use that again. It's a $20 bolt.
Wow.
So you got to make sure you get it right the first time. Now, how do you torque it down? Do average guys on the regular understand how to use a torque wrench, or what a torque wrench is, or that there's a thing called torque that's a measurement? That, like, this bolt has to be a certain amount of tight. You can't just, like, beat it down and crank it as hard as you can. It's got to be a certain tightness or things will go wrong.
So a fastener, like a lug nut on your car, is a real good example. Mm-hmm. So I knew a guy, and he is got a pickup truck. He's a farmer friend of mine. I've known him for all my entire life almost. And I'm like 24 years old, and I remember this. And he has got a breaker bar, and he is literally
cranking,
jumping up and down on the breaker bar, tightening up his lug nuts. And I says, "Hey, man, you are going to Boo Boo," is actually what we called him. "Hey, Boo Boo." And that was his nickname. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I'm like, you know that's a spring and you're over-tightening it. So a bolt or a stud is actually like a spring. So when you, like, torque a stud down, it actually flexes, it moves. But if you take a spring and you just pull it as hard as you can, like a little spring, it loses its springiness. It loses its tension. Well, a bolt does the same thing when you over-torque it. Mm. So he said about 150 miles later that his wheels fell off.
I was going to say, you'll break them.
It was a dually pickup truck and he's like, "Oh, yeah, you told me." And he's like, I felt the truck shaking. I knew it was just going on. And he goes, "All I could think is you telling me that." So basically so I sent him this thing that came from this company called Redneck Axles. and they had like a whole that's what it was called. Dexter Axel, but it was Redneck Trailer Parts. But Dexter Axel had his whole pamphlet on like how to properly torque an axle, and you should use like a lubricant on the threads and a certain kind of lubricant, which is basically like gear oil. You would tighten it to like the 5/8 bolt required like 210 foot pounds of torque. And basically what that means, if you weighed 210 pounds and you stood on a 1 foot wrench or a 1 foot away from where the nut is that you're tightening, that would be 210 foot pounds of torque.
Hmm.
So a torque wrench, what Matt is talking about, like the one that does 210 foot pounds is probably about 26 inches long, and you lean on it and it does a click when you get there. Well, it's very important not to over tighten lug nuts, and I see people do this often. They'll be like on the side of the road, you'll see some guy and he's just like, you know, standing on his on his lug wrench changing his tire. And like, if you're doing that in a Honda Civic and you weigh like 200 pounds, you're putting like 400 foot pounds of torque to that lug nut, and you might just snap it right off. But what's going to happen is you've now taken all the tension out of that bolt, and your wheel's going
to
fall off.
It's got nowhere to go. It's just going to break.
Yep.
The bolt will break.
And that's the number one cause of wheels falling off. The number one cause is not retorquing them or not tightening them up enough. And then the number two cause is over-torquing them, tightening them up too much.
That's the kind of thing that you should be able to pick up at a place like Man Camp. Stuff like that needs to be explained.
We sort of Man Camped all summer long at my property. I had a couple of interns, and we just fixed a bunch of stuff, taught them how to weld. These guys use torque wrenches. You know, we did a head gasket on a tractor, and everybody kind of got into it and learned about it and understood.
Did you reuse the old head bolts, or did you buy new head bolts?
No, we put head studs in it. We studded it instead of using the factory style bolts. And you're not supposed to reuse head bolts.
Right.
They always tell you buy new head bolts because, you know, they've been seasoned. You know, this tractor, I don't know, 12,000 hours on the engine, and how many times did it go from hot to cold in its, you know, 40-year-long life? You got to use new fasteners. You got to use new bolts. And if you do, like, over-torque your lug nuts, some guys like, oh, a couple of them broke off. You need to replace them all, not just a couple of them that broke.
Look at all this madness you can get from the Man Camp people.
And anybody who's got skills, there's so many retired people. This really upsets me. Like my my father-in-law, for example, he was a mechanical engineer, worked in nuclear power plants. Like a guy helped me rebuild my entire house. He moved to Florida, and he's just kind of watching TV, and that's all he's doing. And this guy is like, he would be like the best shop teacher. Like, he knows how to like use every woodworking tool. He knows how to weld. You know, he knows how to like use every kind of like, he like understands like bridge ports and lathes and machining. And it's just such a shame that he's just not teaching young kids, you know, just how to like do real things. Cause the guy knows all the skills, and he's just retired, and he's just like hanging out in his pool and, you know, watching TV. That's what he does.
Well, I mean, he probably worked hard up to that point.
He did.
Right?
He worked hard his whole life, and you know, had a very.
Can't
good
blame
career.
Someone for wanting to take it easy after a like, long time. But yeah, I get the frustration.
Shame.
I like to give him a hard time because, you know, I'd really like him to be around, you know, in a few more years up north here, when his grandkids are ready to learn how to learn the skills he has. Because actually, he taught me a ton of stuff just working on my house with him. You know, he was like. So valuable, and I learned a lot from him. But like, yeah, but there's just a whole bunch of his generation, these guys that are in their 70s that got tons of skills, know how to do all kinds of things, and you know, the
question
not,
is how
not,
many young people want to learn that stuff, right?
Yeah, it's few,
fewer and fewer over time.
Well, you got to start like when your kids are little,
mm-hmm.
like my kids. You know, my daughter's 3, my son's like 19 months old, and they just want to do whatever dad's doing.
Sure.
And I'm always doing farming stuff. I mean, my daughter's helping me mulch a garden the other day. Both my kids were. They were helping me spread hay and mulch around. And I got a little garden tools from Tractor Supply for kids. And they're just so happy to use their garden tools. Like any tool that I have, if I have it in their size and I'm using it, oh, they're using it. Like, actually, I got to get another wheelbarrow now because my kids are fighting over the kids' wheelbarrow. we got one little kids' wheelbarrow. I got to get another one. And
these are good problems to have.
Yeah. So, but I got my wheelbarrow, and you know, Cypress has got her wheelbarrow.
That's adorable.
And then Cash is like trying to fight Cypress for the wheelbarrow, and I'm like, come over here, Cash, help me with my wheelbarrow, and you know, and, but it's by parking an internet device in front of them, none of them are going to want to do anything but internet.
Sure.
And when they're when their brain is developing, you know, that 90% brain development in the first 6 years of a child's life is so important to imprint into them, basically work ethic. I think that's where it has to happen from. Because all of the kids
Super
I know,
important.
All of the kids I know that grew up, all the people I knew that grew up, their parents were either entrepreneurs or farmers, and all farmers are entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Those kids have work ethic.
Yep.
Those kids have skills because, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, you quite likely have to take your kids to work with you. In fact, the little all-in-one right, you know, down the road from my house.
Yeah. Convenience store.
One of the owners had his 4-year-old and his 2-year-old in there with him because his mom's, you know, mom's working and he's got to go to work at, you know, the store they own. And,
I think you're absolutely right about that. Whereas somebody that's just got a job, they can't take their kids to work, and they're usually complaining probably about work at home.
Yep.
And so it's a whole different mindset.
They come home and they're complaining, and then that teaches the kid, oh, whatever work is must really suck.
And then if your mom and like corporate, you know, careerist parents, mom and dad are both working, they're dropping a kid off at daycare.
Sure.
And daycare,
to be raised by who knows who.
Daycare, like somebody's daycares, one of our friends, I got a corporate job, and was paying like, I don't know, it was like $3,800 a month to send his 3 kids to daycare.
Wow.
And it was like a deal because he was sending 3 kids to daycare.
Uh-huh.
He's got a couple of twins and the other ones, but they're not in daycare now. All the kids are teenagers. But at the daycare, one of the things was you had to provide a specific tablet. For the daycare, the daycare is like, oh, your kid needs its own tablet, and you have to provide as part of going to daycare. That's because at the daycare, they just basically want to use this tablet as a pacifier and a babysitter, and basically
zombie daycare.
Yeah, and the kids are just, you know, that's what they're doing. I don't know if every daycare is like that, but this particular daycare,
I bet more of them are than ever. Jay, you had brought in a story tonight you thought was pretty important. I want to make sure we get a chance to cover it, about a dairy farm that has had its facilities caught fire. What happened?
So I've scanned through a few different reports on this. I heard about this on one of the podcasts I was listening to this morning. And so it's in the panhandle of Texas. I said Lubbock, Texas before, but I'm not sure if that's exactly where it is. In the articles, they actually mention a few different towns. But this is a dairy farm that has 18,000 milking cows.
That's a big farm, right?
That is
huge.
Massive.
18,000 cows. Now, I worked on this farm. You guys can check out this farm on YouTube that I worked on in Colorado. Mm-hmm. It's called Lost Creek Dairy. Lost Creek Dairy was set up to milk 6,200 cows.
Okay.
When I was there, I was last there in, I think, 2016, and they weren't quite at 6,200. They were, you know, a new dairy just opened, so you can't just, you know, run these things at full capacity. But they had, I think, 4,800 milkers when I was there, but they had over 12,000 cows in total, because each cow that's milking has a calf.
Mm.
And so what they do is they keep the heifer calves, the female calves, because they'll be next milking. And, most of these dairies, they use, artificial insemination. And then what they use is they call it sexed semen. So they can actually, it's like a 99% chance you're going to get a female cow, a heifer, as the calf. And then you'll have some dry cows. So, you know, like the cows will, you know, lactate for, you know, about 9 months, and then they're dry. And a couple months late, you know, 2 to 3 months later, they'll have a calf. And then after they have the calf, they start lactating.
Okay.
So this dairy that has 18,000 milk cows, was licensed to have 32,500 head in total.
Wow. I can't even imagine. I've seen dairies. A big dairy to me is 250 cows.
Right.
You know,
those dairies can't operate anymore. but so one of the things that caught my attention about this, they said it was an explosion. This is Castro County, which is in the panhandle of Texas.
Okay.
And they said it was an explosion from methane gas. Now, these and some of the pictures, and I watched a couple of videos about this dairy where it was basically just drone footage, like afterwards. Like, the barn is all still intact. It doesn't look like anything's destroyed. Now, it's a big, what they call, freestall barn. This is like acres and acres of like a stable where the sides are all open. And a lot of times they have big fans.
Hmm.
And then they said all 18,000 cows were in a holding pen. We're getting ready to get milked. Now, I don't know how long these guys, how often they milk, but the Lost Creek Dairy, when I was there, they were milking three times a day. So those guys wouldn't put all 6,200 or whatever, 4,800 cows or whatever it was, in the same pen to milk them. They had like different herds, you know, like kind of all over the dairy, and they would, you know, there would be a guy who would, he would be the forwarder guy. He would, these guys would go and they would forward the cows into the pen as they were milking, because it takes, you know, it probably takes like 6 hours or 7 hours to get through a milking. You have to get three of these. Well, when you're milking 18,000 cows, you have to get through three of these milkings per day. I assume they're milking three times a day and not twice. You get a lot more milk production when you milk three times a day. And so what they would do, they would go around, send in a, you know, this pen, and they wouldn't totally take and like mix all the cows together all the time. They kind of kept all the like, they had like, Lost Creek Dairy had, you know, I don't know, 10 or 12 or maybe even 15 different like pens for the cows. And so these cows would come out of pen A, go into the milk room, and then be lined up to milking, and then there would be this gate that they would call it a floating gate. What it would do, it was it would go along between the two herds of cows, and then like the cows from pen B would go in behind them once they were almost done milking all the cows from like pen A, and it would just keep on going for this thing, because you don't want the cows just standing for hours waiting to be milked in a holding pen. You want the cows in their pen being able to lay down and be comfortable in their bedding and being able to eat and drink their water, because these guys want these cows to eat and drink as much as possible, because that's how they produce a lot of milk. Now, I refer to these big commercial dairy operations as utter pus factories. That's what I call them, because the cows are producing like 120 pounds a day at these huge commercial outfits where they're pumping hormones to them, and then they're just hammering them with all kinds of very harsh, high starch feeds and brewer's grain, all kinds of stuff to make these cows produce a lot of milk. And actually, based on the numbers, these 18,000 cows on one of the reports said produce 2.2 million pounds per milk per day, which actually is like 125 pounds of milk per cow. Wow. Now, that's a Holstein, which is sort of a man-engineered hybridized cow, like a Jersey cow, for example, or a Brown Swiss, which are like heirloom cows. Those cows might produce 40 pounds a day of milk, but they're like, you know, organic, like, you know, heritage cows. So there's a couple of factors with this thing here. I think there's definitely some fishy business with 18,000 cows, all 18,000 cows dying because of an explosion, which I find very odd.
No survivors?
Right.
Very few, apparently, according to one report I'm looking at.
Yeah, like one I said, all of them were dead. Now, did they walk around and euthanize all the cows that didn't, you know, that were suffering? Could that have happened? Did ones die off later? Now, here's the thing with dairy cows, especially Holsteins. If you just look at them the wrong way, they'll die on you. They're like sort of fragile. You really got to pay attention to them. And, you know, like if you miss a milking, it'll screw your whole herd up. And then, like, they'll get, like, mastitis. You got to put them on, like, you know, you got to put them on like antibiotics or medication. If you don't do that, the infection in their udders, it can turn into a disaster. Like dairymen really, really have to pay attention, and they do. And this is, you know, what has to happen. But so I kind of think that, you know, a farm like this would have a whole bunch of investors, because it's huge. I mean, just to feed Lost Creek Dairy, we put up like 140,000 tons of just corn silage last year I was there, maybe a little more. I don't remember the exact numbers, but like I said, they had like almost 12,000 cows. And they would, and then we, you know, put up, I don't know, 30, 40,000 tons of this like triticale and sorghum and, you know, hay in these like silage bunkers. That's one of the jobs I did out there, was I'd operate, I was working on a harvest crew, just harvesting forage for dairies.
Okay.
And then they feed a whole bunch of corn. They get semi-truck loads of hay, you know, just hundreds of thousands of tons of hay go into that operation. And, like, right now, especially in the panhandle of Texas, I was just looking at some Texas agricultural hay market reports, and, like, hay's, like, you know, $260 to $300 a ton for dairy hay right now, which is a lot of money. The grain, the electricity, the amount of diesel fuel you need, and labor to run a dairy operation.
So the cost of running a dairy is going up, but the price of milk is stagnant or going down.
It's basically like $18 a hundredweight for like a month ago. I didn't find anything like accurate for today. But, you know, in 2007, for example, milk was like $23 or $24 a hundredweight. And then there's even some things in the 80s where milk was like, you know, in the high teens that these farmers were getting, you know, for the 100 weight of milk. 100 weight of milk is like almost 12 gallons of milk.
So these guys got 18,000 cows. They're not making any money on.
They got to be losing money hand over fist. I mean, with
you think this is insurance fraud?
Well, I think it's pretty convenient for the, you know, for the investors. I mean, it could be. I don't know. just the fact that 18,000 of them die in an explosion and they're all like jammed together in one spot for the explosion. Was there a massive cold snap in the panhandle of Texas when they happened and they had them all inside of a barn? Because Texas is hot, and cows, when they're together, they need to be cooled down. Even in the wintertime, when you got, you know, 25 cows in like a regular New England barn, they got half the windows open all the time.
They have all of the farm's fertilizer right in the middle of those 18,000 cows?
I mean, this is also convenient for the whole, like, cow farts are bad thing. Right? So, I don't know, but it was an explosion from methane. I mean...
Oh, a little conspiracy theory there. It sounds pretty. It could be a little...
I don't know, but I imagine if you look into the numbers of this particular dairy operation, if you could do that, you would see...
Tape would be, are they going to rebuild it or not, or just going to take the money and run? Take the money and run.
How much massive debt do they have right now? You look at a year of $6 diesel fuel, right?
That's right.
That is insane. All that equipment uses
fertilizer's going up, and
yeah. Also, like the fertilizer is like you can't even like farmers can't even get loan, can't even buy enough fertilizer to do what they usually do because a lot of their like loan requirements are like, oh, here you get X amount of dollars for fertilizer this year, because most of these big farms they're just farming off of credit. Banks are certainly running the whole thing, and they're like, oh, the fertilizer is $600 a ton when, you know, it's been $100 a ton. All the inputs are insanely high, and there's not money to be made in it. I bet you this theory had a lot of debt.
Interesting theory. Check out Jay over at jaynoon.com, jaynoone.com. If you want to contribute to Man Camp, and we will be back tomorrow online. In the meantime, you can join us over at freetalklive.com. We'll see you tomorrow.
If you have an IRA or 401k, please listen closely. My name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. Throughout my career, let's just say I've been in some hairy situations. And I believe right now the biggest threat facing Americans is they need to protect their wealth, which is exactly what I'm doing for my wife and 6 kids. And I believe the ultimate safe haven is physical gold and silver. You can protect your hard-earned retirement assets with a tax-free loophole that allows you to convert your retirement into physical gold and silver. The folks I use are Advantage Gold, and believe me, I've investigated the heck out of all types of people. Advantage Gold is the nation's highest rated gold company. They have the best process, pricing, and service. If you want to get your free gold and silver investment kit, please contact Advantage Gold right now, and you'll see how easy it is to protect yourself with precious metals. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never not once been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.